Welcome to the Pensions Expert Podcast. My name is Alex Janiel, and I'm joined by Lydia Fern, who is Redington's Head of DC and Financial Wellbeing, and Maria Nazarova-Doyle, Head of DC Investment Consulting at JLT Employee Benefits. Our cover story, written by Sophia Imerson, brought the news of Lloyds overhauling its DC default fund. They've ditched a diversified growth fund in favour of 100% equity allocation for members in the first year of saving. Bucking an emerging trend to de-risk members towards drawdown, the scheme has also opted to focus the majority of its default portfolio on annuity purchase in the run-up to retirement. Maria and Lydia, you both featured in this article. Maria, what are the key points to consider when designing a new default fund strategy?
Thank you. So there are different ways of designing a default strategy, obviously, but what I'd like to talk about is a recipe for a good default design. And there are a few main ingredients in that. And one would be, one that is the main one, is members. You need to understand your members. You need to know who they are, what they might want. You need to do proper member analysis, and you need to design your default funds in line with their needs and preferences insofar as you can gather those that and the data around it. So this is what the regulator wants, and this is what will ultimately drive better member outcomes if the default is actually bespoke to the needs of the membership for a particular pension scheme. So that would be my main base ingredient for this recipe. But the second and probably just as important one is future-proofing. So you need to future-proof your default because member demographics change, member preferences change. We see member behaviours data being collated all the time. So we're trying to monitor whether they're going for cash, you know, whether they're going for drawdown, annuity, what they're trying to do. So we need to keep a finger on the pulse there, understand what it is they're doing. And the default design should be future-proof so that you can take account of those changes in member behavior. But also you need to keep one eye on the developing regulations in DC space, because we have quite a lot going on. And again, if you design your default, it should be able to withstand any potential regulatory pressure and changes so that you can make any adjustments easily without much disturbance to your membership base. And the last but not least that I should mention here would be sustainability. So potentially could be tied in with future proofing, but actually I think it's so important that it deserves to be a standalone ingredient in this recipe. Default strategies are such long-term vehicles. You have to make sure they're sustainable. Then, you know, the investment that you put in place for defaults, they need to be done so with a long-term future in mind and long-term risks in mind as well.
I mean, Lydia, your thoughts on DC default design?
So I do agree with a lot of the points there. I think members and understanding what they're doing, their actual experience is really important, especially when you're designing the target of a default strategy. The other area that I think is important is cost, and the implications of that cost for members, how much is going to cost them, not just in one point in time, but all the way through the whole lifestyle and process through to retirement. So there's many areas to consider, and it's really important that we make sure that we focus on it, monitor it, change it if necessary, and make sure we've got members at the forefront of our minds when we're designing it.
Sure. I mean, how have DC default fund strategies evolved, and where are they heading?
We've seen quite a bit of change over the last few years. We did see a very big rise in diversified growth funds within default designs. And I think that was sort of born from the financial crisis and the fact that people and trustees were actually very concerned about members losing money. For young members particularly, when they're putting in the start of their savings, their DC for the long term, that those pound notes have to work pretty hard. So in line with sort of the area that Lloyds have gone down, introducing more equities in the early stages and potentially de-risking over another couple of stages sort of towards retirement, where members might be taking cash at 55 or they might be staying invested over the longer term when they potentially could retire. So there's lots of different things members can do. I think we're in quite a transitional period at the moment because members are starting to take cash to use the freedoms. But, you know, things might change as those pots grow in size. So it's really important to be considerate of our members and think about where they're heading and the likely behaviours of them in the future. And also, we can't, and I know we may touch on this but we can't forget around the investment risks that go into default design, and that obviously sits around environmental, social and governance risk, the ESG risk that we've seen in the new legislation coming out. So those are areas that we definitely need to think about, and we've seen default funds and strategies moving in that direction, which I think is important.
Maria, do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely agree, and probably would add just a couple of small points as well. I think DGF still have a very important role to play in DC default design, but probably towards the later stages of investment. So once the pots are ready, more or less accumulated, and members are close to retirement, and they're potentially thinking maybe taking some bits of money out, but continuing to still save in the same vehicle. So just to manage that volatility risks when the members approach 55 and they're slightly over that age, whereas volatility is maybe not that much of a risk during the early years of saving. It becomes more of a focus when pots are large, and any kind of fluctuations mean quite a lot of actual pounds being lost for a person at the time when they probably need the money the most, because they're about to retire or about to take the benefits. But also in terms of general comment on default design, I think we went quite a journey from, you know, balanced funds and then UK equity index funds to now lots of funds using active management or smart beta, you know, lots of different, more sophisticated type approaches in DC. So the spilling over from DB into DC, and especially the schemes are growing in size. The sophistication in those strategies is increasing quite a lot. And for one, what I would like to see is introduction or more widespread use of alternative investments, and particularly liquids in DC default design, because again, there's such long-term vehicles, 20, 30, 40 years of investment. Members should not be missing out on the advantages of these kind of investments.
Sure. I mean, Maria, plans by the government to force trustees to outline how they are taking their members' ethical views into account into the investment strategies have been scrapped, but schemes will be required to publish more detailed statements of investment principles from October next year. To what extent should members' ethical views influence DC default investment strategy?
Very short answer, they probably shouldn't. I think for trustees, the job is very difficult as it is to try and create a default fund that looks after the needs of the majority of members. So they're trying to work with averages without hitting it maybe perfectly for every single member as an individual. And if they were to try and take account of ethical views and put them all overlay it on one fund, it's probably pretty much impossible to do. What they should be doing, though, is looking at financially material factors that are part of environmental, social and governance considerations, and things like climate change, which I absolutely agree with. These are factors that pose real risks to default strategies over the long term of member savings, so they really should be taken into account. However, ethical views of specific members, it's going to be a much, much harder job to implement, and are probably better placed in a wider, better quality fund range, so that members who want to express their ethical views can do so within their DC scheme, but not necessarily as part of the default.
Lydia?
Yeah, I agree. It is difficult to get members' ethical views into the default, but that shouldn't stop us asking their views. We still should be checking in with members. There's been numerous research that's been out the last year or so, and where people talk to members, even in the government response, there was a lot of positivity from members saying, we want to know where the default's invested. We want to get an idea of how that's impacting the future sustainability of the world. You know, they want this information. And I think whilst the government has scrapped that requirement, and it's probably the right thing to do right now, that shouldn't stop us in the industry, trustees, governance committees, actually asking members what they want and how they want that investment to be moving in the future, and what they're willing to do in order to achieve their outcomes. So I absolutely believe that the climate and the longer term ESG factors should be taken account of in investment risk. And we continue and have those discussions with our trustees and governance committees, that should continue. But alongside that, we should definitely be speaking to our members.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Thank you, Lydia, and thank you, Maria. To read our Lloyd story and for more on DC default fund investment, please visit pensions-expert.com.